am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be with Harold Holzer. Lincoln, President-elect Abraham Lincoln and the Great Secession Winter of 1860-61. I grew up in the land of Lincoln. I thought I knew everything there was to know about Lincoln. That stretch really has been misconstrued as him being dithering and doltish and that what's wrong with this pictureness? There's nothing about Lincoln that is stupid. Sometimes he missteps, but isn't there almost a will to find divots in this guy?
Oh yeah. Oh, there's a school of, especially the, now that there is a new period of reverence, and where in the run up to the bicentennial, there is also a heightening of the anti-Lincoln tradition.
Yeah.
Everybody from Ron Paul to, who actually used an anti-Lincoln phrase in a presidential debate. That's the first time that's ever happened. I thought, this guy's brave. He wound up with 1% of the vote. I think he almost got there. But it's true. The misconceptions, I think, are based on the public record that of Lincoln not compromising, B, not making some big statement to assuage the Southerners who were threatening to secede, and the record of his private correspondence and his arm twisting and his determination and his patience. We're going to have 6 weeks between the election of a president and the inauguration. He had 4 months, and sitting on top of a powder keg for 4 months takes a lot of diligence, patience, and skill, and he had it all.
And the ability to resist awesome pressures from every possible side.
From both sides, absolutely.
And please go back again, that I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on your lines there. The pressures that he have, it was not acceptable for him to say anything. It wasn't just that he was being, yes, he was being shrewd and cautious, but that tradition was such that, A, the president wasn't seen or really heard of, the candidate was...
Right.
Which is so weird to us in the 24 news hour cycle.
You know, it's a funny way that this tradition started. I'm not sure I know exactly how it came to be. I mean, we started with President Washington being told in February that he was going to be president, and then a few weeks later he went to Washington. Or what? To New York, excuse me, not Washington.
Washington went to New York, New York didn't go to Washington.
Right, exactly, or vice versa. But I don't think any of the founders anticipated that there would be a November popular vote, an elector, you know, it all was going to happen right at the same time.
Yeah.
So somehow we got stretched in the wrong direction, pushed back in the schedule to allow for popular voting, to allow for electors to come from around their states and meet in the capital of the state to ratify that popular vote.
And when the far west is Illinois.
Yeah. You know, Lincoln didn't know about the California vote for about 4 weeks. So we're talking about transportation, communication, primitiveness. And that's why we had this four-month hiatus. But in the meantime, the press is active, and it's not 24/7 news cycle, but they're writing every day, and he's got a big problem.
And he's supposed to be quiet.
We also had this bizarre electoral college, which we still have. Requires that state meeting and then the official and then something.
And, you know,
something.
Lincoln wasn't sure he'd win those. He had, I've been saying since, you know, and I try to make the point in the book, he had three election days. November, then he had December 15th when all the state electors met, and he was worried that they just wouldn't meet in the South. And then what happens when they go to Washington? Aside from the fact that some of them are threatening to have an armed resistance, what if the Southerners just don't report? What constitutes a quorum? What if he gets his 180 electoral votes, which is what he won, but nobody else casts votes? Is he still the winner? He didn't know. This was uncharted territory. And, we think we were nervous in 2000 with Gore Bush. This was nerve-wracking, too, for
three times.
Well, and there was no absolute requirement that the electors vote as they had. I mean, they were there. The whole concept was that these would be honorable people and that they would do right. But
I don't think they're required.
They're still not required. But they don't really break. I don't think they break at all.
But they could.
It's the option.
Well, in Washington, I went to the National Archives. I said, I want to see the electoral vote reports that were filed in each state on December 15th. And they brought them out. I don't think anybody's ever looked at them since 1861.
No.
They were folded over and they practically creaked open. Yeah. They had their fresh, beautiful seals on them. They weren't sealed. The seals were broken. But the seals were still in high relief. And there it is, Illinois voters, New York, Massachusetts, the Southerners. They all did their duty, I must say. Then they went crazy, but they did their duty.
But this also goes to the question that Paula asked, and it partly asking about how you rethought this period. And part of it, of course, you know, the interest, the visual part of that is interesting. Part of it, I just sort of reflexively go back to the Enlightenment. How about looking at the evidence?
Oh, Bill!
Not to be trite, but one of the charming things about what you do is to go look at the evidence, the newspaper articles, the speeches, the documents, the pieces of paper that haven't apparently nobody's looked at. And Lincoln, of all people, who was it? Richard Slotkin said, "You know, you want to have a fight, just go to any bar in America and say Lincoln."
Well, he was talking about history
historians. Good writer too.
Yeah,
Richard Slotkin.
Well,
yes.
Thank you for bringing that up. I'm a fan too, and it was Slotkin who sat more or less where we are, who said, and he wrote this wonderful novel called Abe. Mm-hmm.
Small A. I remember the dust jacket.
The thing that he said that just absolutely stopped me in my tracks. Richard Slotkin is a renowned American historian who looks at popular culture, and he was teaching at
Wesleyan.
Mm-hmm. And said he was standing in front of a class one day talking about the great American novel, which is Huck Finn. And he had one of those, oh my God, this is the great American novel that Mark Twain wrote, and it's Abraham Lincoln's life. Oh my God.
His early life.
Well, his early life, but it's sort of
is
like
that
reading.
Is why he did the novel? I didn't know.
Exactly.
Well,
why.
He goes the next step, which is to say, and the reason he wrote it was, and he says he does this fairly regularly, is, you know, when he... His words were proved. People argue about that. But when he can prove something from a historical standpoint.
As an historian.
You know, he writes history books.
Yeah.
With lots of footnotes.
When he is absolutely confident that something is the case, but the evidence is not sufficient, then he writes novels. And what he did, and that, you know, that,
it's a well-researched piece of fiction. I have
yes, well, indeed, and he
yes. His piece.
And he does it because he's confident in his
exactly.
assertions, but he can't footnote it.
Exactly. You know, I'm very. This is off the point. Mm. And as a professional PR person myself, this is a really foolish thing to say because if you're here to talk about one project, you don't talk about another
one. By all means, do.
But I was.
It's
really,
all one project.
Exactly.
You mean the Lincoln Project?
Well, life.
I mean, let's talk about democracy.
Yeah, life is right the highest level of this discourse. But I did I just finished editing a collection for the Library of America called The Lincoln Anthology. Not thrilled with the title, but that's what it's going to be called. It's direct, and I'm very pleased that I've never met Richard Slotkin, but it was my suggestion that toward the end of the book, Richard Slotkin, Adam Braver, a few of these younger people who've written fiction. Would be represented in the book.
Wonderful.
And it ends with Barack Obama.
How interesting.
The only living writer who did not give permission to have his words adapted. If anyone's listening out there connected with the campaign, I'm very hurt. However, fair use. We got around it with some fair use stuff.
Well, that is partly important to me because it is so easy to be looking at the comparisons, as I love to do. I'm from the land of Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And when you look at Barack Obama coming from the land of Lincoln, it's sort of like Lincoln. Yeah, well, he's also from Hawaii, and he's also from Kansas, and
sure.
And there's something about that roiling mass and mess that is Illinois that brings again.
I'm glad you said that.
I have to go there a lot. Say it again. I love the place. There's something very American about that setting that puts big ideas in contest.
And doesn't he have it right announcing his candidacy at the State House? I thought that was just such a wonderful touch. However anyone feels about either choice, I just found it so suggestive. And he hit just the right note he jokes around, I'm another skinny guy from Illinois. But Lincoln wasn't so skinny. I should tell him that too. He did it so beautifully, which is why I wanted some of that speech in the Lincoln Anthology, and it will be there somehow.
Yay.
I'm sorry.
But it's just, it's an amazing field, this Lincoln field. You think it's exhausted, and here it is, hotter than ever, more competitive than ever, I'm I'm upset to report.
Well, but there's life in that. That this isn't... you say so many wonderful things in this, that this isn't some little Victorian story. Well, A, it's easy to forget this is Victorian America, and Victorian is fusty and overwrought.
Very Victorian. And which is why he was expected to be silent and appropriate and all of that.
Well, to...
As was his wife.
we can go there a little later.
He's Victorian, but not fusty.
And even there, you show lots of the important underlying themes of humankind, of democracy, of America, of change. And I say that out of my context, not the current political exchange, change, the evolutionary sense of this. All of these are very much awake, and Lincoln is still vital to these conversations.
It is amazing. And I love the idea that we have candidates fighting over the Lincoln tradition, at least using it, at least learning from it. I hope when there's a transition, they'll look, you know, they don't even have to have my name on the product. They can just look at some of the pages about how to do a successful transition and all the lessons.
Well, I saw this book come through. I've gotten where Lincoln has become increasingly important as the quality of American presidents has diminished over my adult life.
Yeah.
And yet he was important to FDR.
Absolutely.
Who arguably faced as great a crisis as Lincoln did.
Right.
And Roosevelt just took such pride in stealing Lincoln for the Democrats.
We'll be right back with Harold Holzer, and we will steal Lincoln for the present moment and think about what those transition lessons are when we return with the Paula Gordon Show. We trust you'll be here too.